and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we're talking about muffins.
Yes, muffins. Surprisingly fun. A fun episode.
It is. Oh, and not just because muffin is such a wonderfully silly-sounding word.
It really is. And this is sort of inspired by, I guess everyone's making banana bread right now. I haven't seen this, but I hear the jokes about how a lot of people's social media feeds is just pictures of banana bread. And to me, it totally makes sense why you would be doing that.
Sure.
You got bananas around and they're getting a little ripe. But yeah,
you got some extra time on your hands right now. So yeah. You notice them going ripe and don't just notice them like 3 days later and go
right.
Like, oh, welp,
right.
That would have been good banana bread.
Exactly. I know Chrissy Teigen made some and it Instagram sensation.
Okay.
I love banana bread.
Me too.
She would make it like pretty rarely. So it was really exciting. It was a really exciting thing.
Okay.
I don't have any bananas, but if I encounter some, I might make some banana bread.
Yeah, I feel bad buying bananas, and you can see our banana episode for more on that. But you can make a quick bread with, basically any kind of ripe fruit, very similar to, I really like a pear bread. You get some overripe pears, because pears also have that thing where, you know, like they go so overripe so quickly. So it's great for that. But yeah, I had a big banana bread phase a few years back. And I have to say, I can make an excellent one.
Oh, don't tempt me with that, Lauren. Oh, my gosh. I like to think that you could, like, chart out your life like an epochs, like the banana bread's age.
Totally.
The sauerkraut age.
Yeah. It's not like my blue period. It's like my banana bread period. Absolutely.
Yes. I love it. And my mom did make banana bread muffins.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I liked because there's something about it just being sort of contained. Nice little bite just ready for you that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, the single serving is nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't really have muffins too much anymore. When I was a kid, I loved blueberry muffins. And when I first started this job as an intern, I would occasionally bring in stuff from home because I live by myself and I don't want to eat like 26 muffins.
An entire, right, sure.
Right. So I have this chocolate chip muffin recipe. It is so good. It is the best.
Ooh.
It involves sour cream.
Oh, yeah.
I made it once and then I remember like a week later, Tyler, a friend and coworker of ours, kind of shyly asked if I could make some more.
Oh.
Like, yes, absolutely yes.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Yes. And I want to thank this episode so much for reminding me about the apple muffin.
The
apple muffin.
What about the apple muffin?
Oh my God. So this is one of my favorite things ever. I have a like folder of like nuclear option videos of I'm having a bad day. This video will cheer me up.
Oh,
this is a video from a legislative debate out of New York State's government about it was actually about yogurt and making yogurt the state sack. But in it, they actually get in this huge debate about it. And the apple muffin comes up because the apple muffin is New York State muffin.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay, sure. That makes sense. New York, the Big Apple, apple muffins.
Yes. I think since 1987. I've done a lot of research into this because I love this clip so much. And they are arguing about what constitutes a snack. Well, what about gluten? Like, they get really into it. And the guy who's proposing it, it was like the idea of a bunch of fourth graders, you know, so... But he's up there fighting for the yogurt, and he brings up the apple muffin, and he starts laughing. And he just can't get through the sentence. It's so funny.
So. Oh, that is delightful. Huzzah. I'm super into that. That sounds great.
Yes, we'll definitely have to watch that clip after this. And I highly recommend any listeners. It was on The Daily Show. That's where I encountered it. But you can find it. It lives online forever.
Well, I guess speaking of legislation, apparently February 20th is National Muffin Day.
February 20th?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sure.
Don't know why.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure, sure. And then you can see our cupcake episode for, because I feel like here in the United States, they're essentially cupcakes without frosting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk more about that in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And also, top of the muffin to you, the Seinfeld episode. Thanks also to this for reminding me of that. Which is where Elaine gets in this business where she's just selling the muffin tops.
Just the tops, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to talk more about that as well later on.
Yes. Yes. You got a lot to look forward to. But in the meantime, okay, let's get to our question. Muffins. What are they?
Well, as with so many foods that we talk about, muffin can mean a lot of things. But generally what humans mean, English-speaking humans at any rate, by the word muffin, is a sweetened quick bread baked in a single-serving unit, about the size of a fist, in specialized muffin cups or muffin tins. And I will note here that fists and muffins may both vary pretty widely in size. So
yes.
Fist-sized, your mileage may vary. But at any rate, quick bread is a key term here. And that's a category of baked goods that are chemically leavened, so you don't have to mess around with yeast, and you can go from, like, raw ingredients to hot and tasty food in, like, less than half an hour, and you don't even have to whip the heck out of eggs or butter and sugar in order to do it. Whipping the heck out of eggs or butter and sugar, those are two ways of creating high-rising structure within other baked goods. Many breads use yeast. Many cakes use the eggs and or creamed butter and sugar combination. At any rate, you don't have to do any of that for a quick bread. Huzzah.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a bit about chemical leaveners in our pancakes episode, and these are things what produce bubbles of gas when exposed to either something acidic or to heat. Baking soda, sodium bicarbonate, is one. It's a compound that reacts with acids to produce carbon dioxide, and cream of tartar produces carbon dioxide bubbles when heated, and baking powder is a combination of baking soda and cream of tartar. So it's double acting. You might have seen that word on baking powder packaging. So making quick breads is simple with the use of chemical leaveners because you just mix your dry ingredients in one bowl, your flour, your leaveners, any mix-ins you're using, and your wet ingredients in another bowl, your milk, your oil or melted butter, and sugar. I know sugar is dry. It's weird. It's an amorphous solid. Just roll with it being in the wet category. And then you stir the wet and the dry together until they're just barely combined and then toss the batter in the oven. I mean, you put it in a pan of your choosing first. I wouldn't just like throw it in there.
Just
like
throw it in?
Jackson Pollock, no. But when you're doing this combination, you don't want to overstir or let it sit very long once the wet and dry are combined. Like a little stirring in time will let the baking soda and whatever acid is in the recipe go to work creating bubbles, but too much stirring or time and those bubbles will deflate and give you a sunken muffin. Nobody wants a sunken muffin.
I've done that before.
Yeah. This method of batter creation is named for muffins. It's the muffin method.
Oh, my gosh. I love that.
I know. And, doing this correctly, the result will be a moist, tender baked good that rose just so fast and so effectively that it may have spilled out over the top of its container in the oven, creating a pretty domed top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We used to call them sombrero hat muffins.
Sombrero hat muffins? That's really weird, but sweet.
I think I made it up when I was a kid because they looked like sombrero hats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Like that terminology, many muffin flavors are sweet, either a dried or fresh fruit involved, nuts, chocolate, stuff like that added in. But muffins can be savory as well with cheese or herbs or hot peppers or like onions and garlic. Wheat flour or similarly behaving flours are common, but cornmeal can also be used or a combination. Most cornbreads are, by the way, also quick breads. English muffins, meanwhile, are another thing entirely. Those are savory yeast-raised flatbreads that are cooked in a stovetop pan or on a griddle using a tall-sided metal ring to keep the dough in place. The ring, like, forces the dough to rise as it cooks instead of spreading out like a pancake would, thus helping create structure within the setting dough, like those nooks and crannies, right? So, also, the dusting of cornmeal that often comes on the outside of English muffins helps, like, mitigate the direct heat of the cooking surface and prevents too crusty of a crust from forming.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the frightening question.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
What about the nutrition?
Look, y'all, muffins are out of control. like store-bought muffins, like oversized, super sweet, wildly rich. They can run you a quarter of your daily caloric intake and all or more of your recommended intake of sugar with very little protein on the balance. And I know that they can seem like a sensible snack or like grab-and-go breakfast sort of situation, but to be honest, you're usually better off just getting a donut at that rate, because a donut will probably have a little bit more fat and probably way less sugar. So it'll fill you up and keep you going longer than a muffin.
I remember very vividly, I was stuck in LaGuardia, as often happens in LaGuardia, back when we could travel.
Oh, yep.
And I was just desperately looking around for something to eat. And so I got in this huge line for Dunkin' Donuts. And I got all the way to the front. And then I saw the muffin I had wanted. I was finally able to read the calorie count. And I got up to the register and she said, "What will you have?" And I said, "Never mind."
Oh.
It was like outrageous. I knew it was going to be high, but whoa.
But you were just like, nope.
No, because it wasn't even that big. And I thought,
oh, sure.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, that stuff, it gets wild.
Yeah. I know it's a gag in Max Smart. I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I remember there was a muffin, a joke about how many calories, surprisingly, are in even the smallest ones. And then here's this quote that I loved from Jeremy Glass over at Thrillist. "With an average muffin packing more than 400 calories and a mind-melting 40 grams of sugar in one serving, eating a muffin for breakfast is exactly the same as taking out your heart, putting it on a serving dish, and then covering your heart with killer bees whose own hearts are filled with spite. The muffin as a whole isn't a bad thing. Convenient, delicious, easy to snack on when you're rushing for the train. But let's be honest about it. It's nothing more than a frostingless cupcake masquerading as a sensible adult breakfast choice." I love killer bees and their hearts are killer, full of spite.
Right? Oh, gosh. That's a gorgeous quote from Jeremy. He also does some food writing over at howstuffworks.com. So good writer, good human. of course, if you make muffins at home, like you can make all kinds of substitutions and additions to get more protein and less sugar in there. Yogurt or applesauce in place of some of the oil, whole wheat flour or nut flour in place of some of the white flour, added seeds or nuts or fresh fruit, just a little bit less sugar in general. I mean, it's a treat. Enjoy it. If you have that muffin craving, I encourage you to indulge it because it's important to indulge cravings because it's nice. But, you know, just be aware of serving sizes.
I know I used to make a pretty good zucchini carrot apple muffin.
Ooh.
It doesn't sound very good, but actually
that sounds
great.
Good. Yeah.
So, you can expand your muffin horizons. I don't think I ever would have considered that as a muffin until I was like, well, zucchini bread is a thing. Why isn't there zucchini muffin? And there you go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The rest is history. We do have some numbers for you. The number one selling brand of English muffins is Thomas's English Muffins. That probably is not a surprise, accounting for an annual $500 million. According to the New York Times, an estimated 7 people know the recipe for these English muffins. One of them, Chris Botticella, ended up in court after he left the company for rival Hostess Brands in 2010.
Oh, dang.
Oh, yeah. This was such a great read. The court documents refer to the recipe books as code books, and they detail how the recipe was split into several pieces to prevent it from leaking out.
So, wow.
Yeah.
They horcruxed the recipe? I love it.
They totally did. Apparently, two industry consultants spent years attempting to nail down this recipe, but found they could not consistently produce the, quote, nooks and crannies. So, very fun English muffin intrigue.
Yeah. And there is a lot written. I mean, like, you can pretty easily find a good, like, scientific guide to how to make regular muffins, like, tasty and good, and how that works. But there is, like, it's a lot more complicated when you get into the English muffin situation. So now I'm taking it as, like, a baking challenge. I don't particularly like English muffins. I mean, I don't hate them. Like, they're fine. But I'm, like, at that point, there's a lot of other bread products I would rather be consuming.
But
now I'm like, now the challenge. Oh, I need some baking rings.
I actually have those.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe with our powers combined.
Maybe.
In terms of non-English muffins, as of 2018, packaged muffins made up about 68% of the global muffins market, as opposed to artisanal or store-baked muffins. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, there is a muffins market. Yes, people in the food research industry refer to it as such. I love that.
Delightful.
And furthermore, as of 2020, the muffins market is estimated to be worth $7.8 billion worldwide.
Wow.
And it's on the rise. Like, it's predicted to reach $9.3 billion by 2026.
Wow.
I don't know. Like, I guess outside of when I was a poor college student living partially out of, like, whatever my school vending machines had to offer, I don't really think of packaged muffins being a food group, but they certainly are.
I've actually been thinking seriously about this for a while. We need to reinvent the food pyramid in terms of quarantine. And maybe, I think mine is like hot sauce, wine. That's it. I would love to have like a muffin section.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, my quarantine food pyramid is definitely like the base is just like bread and peanut butter. It's a delicious, delicious base. And coffee. Oh, it's all floating on a river of coffee, like the river Styx. It's just...
You're right. Coffee is a huge part of it.
Wow. And then box wine somewhere. Yeah,
box wine.
Yeah, yeah, like floating clouds of like balloons, like hot air balloons.
I like this. I've been looking for art projects. Maybe I'll take this up. You work on the science of the English muffin.
Okay.
I'll make a ridiculous food chart, a food pyramid chart.
Perfect.
Sounds Love fair. All right. We do have a lot of history for you.
We do, but first we've got a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, as you might imagine, tracking down the history of any type of bread product is tricky for a lot of reasons. But food historians think that the muffin got started with the English, perhaps in the 17th-ish century. The term originally referred to small yeast-risen things that were more bread-like than crumpets were.
Crumpets being a little bit more pancake-like.
Right. The word muffin first appeared in the written record in the 18th century. These things were also commonly called gems, which I love. To make them, people traditionally used muffin rings on a griddle.
Like today's English muffins. And these muffins were also likely less sweet than modern muffins, as sugar was still pretty expensive. From a cookbook called The Art of Cookery, Made Plain and Easy, from 1747, there was this warning about this style of muffin. It said, "Don't touch them with a knife, either to spread or cut them open. If you do, they will be heavy as lead."
Oh no.
Very, very strongly worded. I love it. Yeah, you were to open them with a fork and only a fork.
Yes, don't you dare use a knife. Don't you dare.
Meanwhile, the word muffin in English, possibly, no one's entirely sure, possibly came from either a German word for a small cake, muff or muff, being muffin in the plural or muffin in the plural. I'm not entirely sure on the pronunciation there. Or from an old French word for soft or tender, mufflette, mufflet. I don't know French. Also, a side note here, an etymology side note. I had to pull myself away from an extremely tempting rabbit hole about the etymology of ragamuffin, which seems to be entirely separate. And I love it.
That's great.
Oh, gosh. I am going to treat myself to that rabbit hole later on, and I am so excited.
We are such nerds, and I love it.
It was originally...
Treat yourself to some research.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, it was originally a word for the devil.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and like probably Cockney-based, but no one's entirely sure anyway, so I'm psyched.
You bring up the devil. I see why you're so excited. I might go on the same rabbit hole now.
I'll send you a link.
Perfect. Yes.
I'll post it for y'all too.
Yay. Rabbit holes for all. Muffins were a really popular item during the early 19th century. For those that could afford a servant, it was kind of a luxury to have the servants wake up for you and make this food so it would be ready when you were up for breakfast.
Yes, still these made in a ring on a griddle or stovetop situation.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't have a servant, there was an alternative. The Muffin Man.
The Muffin Man?
Do you know the Muffin Man? During tea time, Muffin Men would go through the streets ringing their bells to alert people that they were around. They were selling muffins, sort of like a very early precursor to the ice cream truck, I guess. They were so rampant that in the UK in the 1840s, Parliament passed a law banning the bells, but it was largely ignored because, of course, it was. Muffin Man nursery rhyme originated sometime in the 1820s.
And related to that nursery rhyme, I basically cannot hear the word muffin without thinking about Shrek and what an absolute jewel of a human John Lithgow is.
Yeah. Actually, me too. Every time I think of muffin, Shrek is the first thing I think of.
Oh,
almost. It's up there for sure.
If you guys do not remember what I'm talking about, there's a great John Lithgow is playing the villain of the piece, and there's this moment where he's kind of interrogating the gingerbread man, mm-hmm. and he just leans in real close, and he's just like, "Do you know the Muffin Man?"
Yes. It's excellent.
The Muffin Man? The Muffin Man. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a very bad John Lithgow right now, but...
I think it was perfectly serviceable.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
At any rate, muffins as we know them could not happen until the invention of modern chemical leaveners. A little bit before all of this that we're talking about, like around the 16th through the early 1800s, there were some chemical leaveners in use. Like fancy bakers could use a hartshorn to give their goods lift. That's baker's ammonia, aka ammonium carbonate, aka smelling salts. It's a stuff plus heat leavener, but it produces ammonia along with the carbon dioxide, so it's not ideal. And yes, it is what people used as smelling salts in the Victorian era. Poor bakers around the same time frame might have used pearlash, aka potash, which was made from wood fire ashes and is basically lye. It's a stuff plus acid leavener, but it also leaves a bit of a chemical aftertaste. The scene would start changing in the 1790s. That's when French chemist Nicolas Leblanc isolated baking soda. Around the same time, cream of tartar was known and used, but it was this expensive byproduct of the wine industry. And researchers did know that the two could be combined into a double-acting sort of thing. But yeah, altogether, like, ouch, super pricey. Both ingredients were super pricey. But then, kind of quickly, a couple things happened around the 1850s. Researchers worked out how to industrially produce baking soda, and an American chemist combined that new cheaper product with a cream of tartar substitute, monocalcium phosphate, to create the first baking powder that could be produced relatively inexpensively and at scale. So yeah, the Industrial Revolution gave us muffins.
Well, thanks for that, I guess. Among other things. After moving from England to the U.S. in 1880, Samuel Bath Thomas created the first Nooks and Crannies English muffin, allegedly based on a half-remembered recipe for his mother's tea cakes. He used a griddle to achieve the exterior crunchiness, and he called them toaster crumpets. Mm. Later that year, he opened a bakery in New York City, and it didn't take long for English muffins to catch on at hotels and restaurants as a fancier option to toast.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By 1884, people were calling them English muffins. Recipes for quick bread muffins were common in late 19th century American cookbooks.
By this time, two additional industrial things had happened. Home kitchens were more likely to have ovens, and sugar was much less expensive. Also around the same time, the oven-ready muffin tin was invented.
In 1920, Fred Wolferman started making English muffins. And yes, that Wolferman. I actually had to look this up, but everyone else seemed to know who he was. But it's another brand of English muffins. It's very popular today. Yes. Pinning down the history of banana bread specifically is also tricky. But essentially, it was probably a recipe provided by a big company or corporation to promote either the use of baking soda and or flour and or the banana sometime between the 30s and the 50s. I know we discussed it in our banana episode, but a lot of these pamphlets came out from people trying to, you know, get people excited about buying and using their whatever they're trying to sell. So that's probably the case with banana bread.
Yeah. And there was a lot of marketing around bananas at the time.
Yes. Yes. The American concept of breakfast. Let's talk about that for a second.
Right?
Yeah. Ooh, it transformed in the 1970s as more women entered the workforce. Since fewer people were around and had the time to make and cook breakfast at home, even eat it probably, the focus shifted to convenience. Grab-and-go items rose in popularity, and companies began introducing products like Sara Lee's frozen muffins.
And this led into, like, kind of a muffin craze in the 80s and in the 90s. And this may have started with a Canadian chain called Marvelous Muffins in 1979 out of Toronto. That's muffins with three M's.
Oh, wow. I've never heard of that, and I love it.
Me neither. This is new to me, but very exciting. So the founders apparently started this chain up after experimenting with these large premium muffins in other shops. They found great success. People were, like, driving in from miles away, going like, but big muffins with stuff in them? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, Dunkin' Donuts added muffins to their lineup by 1980. Muffin shops began opening across the U.S. and Canada with these ever fancier, larger, more cupcakey muffins for sale. Mm-hmm. Muffins got in on the, like, mall chain craze early in 1981. And apparently this is a huge, like, nostalgia factor thing for Canadians. Again, I don't know about it. Write in if this is a thing from your childhood or whenever that you remember. At their peak in the mid-1980s, there were over 130 muffins locations.
Oh, wow.
Oh, gosh. In April of 1986, the Orlando Sentinel ran a piece called Popularity of Muffins on the Rise. And it was It was reporting on recent franchises like All My Muffins, which was one out of Beverly Hills. And they reported that the total sales of muffins in the country was reaching towards $100 million per year.
I love that. The muffins sounds so menacing. Muffins on the rise.
By the early 90s, at least, it was a truth universally acknowledged that muffin tops are the most important part of the muffin. The LA Times ran an article in 92 in which the author claims to have invented a new baked good based on this fact, Muffies. Mm-hmm. If I may quote for you, "Who eats muffin bottoms? Just about everybody prefers the tops, which is why I invented Muffies. They're baked on a baking sheet instead of a muffin tin and have no bottoms."
You've got to appreciate the innovation.
Oh, Muffies. Gosh. And this brings us to the Muffin Tops episode of Seinfeld, which came out in 97.
Oh, and see, in that episode, I'm so happy I get to use my Seinfeld knowledge. In that episode, they disagree. They think you have to make the whole muffin.
Right.
Or else it's not as good. So if, like, you just make the top, it doesn't work.
Yeah. So you have to cut off the stem, right?
Right. And then they're trying to donate the stems, and the people working at food banks or whatever are like, who took the tops? What kind of sicko was just giving us the bottoms? And yes, their slogan is top of the muffin to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did not remember anything about this, but I came across it in my research. And when I realized that it was the thing at the top that you said, the top of the muffin to you, was a Seinfeld reference, I was like, oh, man, I did not beat Annie to a Seinfeld reference.
Impossible.
Impossible. I should have known better. I should have known. Mm-hmm. But of course, like all trends, the muffin trend could not last. Low fat and then low carb trends made it pretty difficult. And yogurt and cupcakes would become the kind of it shops.
Yeah, and Seinfeld did an episode about the yogurt trend as well. But I think the show was over by the time the cupcake trend happened. So that was the Sex and the City thing.
Right. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That Sex and the City factor was huge in the cupcake trend. Gosh.
Oh, yes. But anyway, all right, away from Seinfeld facts for now. Thomas's English muffins, I love this, were imported to Britain for the first time in the 1990s, where they are called American muffins. Please write in and confirm that. That's what I read.
Oh, I love this.
That is so good. That is so good. A decade earlier is actually when the company came up with the Nooks and Crannies slogan. So even though it sounds old-timey and like it's been around forever, it was actually in the 80s that they came up with that.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And somehow, yeah, like we said earlier, the muffins market is still a growing sales category. A lot of manufacturers these days are apparently using food science and some new like plant-based protein ingredients to try to make them a little bit healthier, to sort of fit them back into that grab-and-go niche that they lost hold of as health trends changed.
Right. I wonder. I feel like there must be a muffin I'm not considering. I just can't imagine this.
The Muffin Unconsidered.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Ooh. What? That is a good title for something. Muffin Unconsidered.
Oh, tell me more about this unconsidered muffin that you're contemplating.
Well, I just feel like there's no way the muffin market could be that big. unless I'm not considering a muffin. Somewhere.
I mean, blueberry and chocolate, separately, blueberry muffins and chocolate chip muffins are both pretty popular. And I feel like, when you think about like Hostess or like Little Debbie's or something like that, definitely have little packaged like mini muffins, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Intimates, another Seinfeld reference.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Three for the trifecta. Yes.
Oh, gosh.
All right. I don't know. I wonder, like at Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts, how popular the muffin options are.
They're still out there.
It's true. It's true.
And yeah, and internationally too. So who knows?
Corn muffins.
I don't know.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's true. See, I'm just not piecing together the tapestry that is the muffin market.
Yeah. Those Sam's Club muffins that like are as big as your head. I mean, just size alone means that they're a major factor in the market, I'm sure.
Yeah, they must make up for like one of those counts for 100 regular muffins. You're right. All right. It's coming together.
Well, that is about what we have to say about the muffin. We do have a little bit more for you, but first we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener
mail.
I was trying to do muffins.
Gosh, this is so hard to do via Skype.
Okay. It is.
It's all
it
right. Is.
But we're making it work. We're making it work.
We're trying.
Emma wrote, I just finished listening to your Easter egg episode, and I thought I would give you an insight on how we do Easter in Australia, or at least how I do Easter in Australia. For the last 40 years, I've spent every Easter on the banks of the Gulpa Creek in southern New South Wales. For the last 30 of those years, I've been in charge of organizing an Easter egg hunt for all the children that camp with us. This can vary from 10 children to upwards of 50. Now in the Northern Hemisphere, Easter falls in the lush birth of spring. But down here, we are mid-autumn, on top of which the Australian bush is not soft and gentle like a cultivated garden or park. It is jarring and dry and dusty. I have attached photos of the hunts over the years. I also have to ensure the eggs are hidden early enough that the sun doesn't melt them, but late enough that the parents who were partying the night before get the sleep in that they need. Also, if I leave it too late, the ants can become an issue. Regardless of the problems, by mid-afternoon on Easter Sunday, we have the appropriate number of kids crashing from a sugar high with sore tummies. Another difference from the Northern Hemisphere is that we have replaced the Easter bunny with a local marsupial, the bilby. We have an Easter bilby.
Oh my gosh.
This year, we were also gifted with 3 hours slow TV event on the making of Easter chocolate. From the harvesting of sugarcane in Queensland to the eventual sale of Cadbury Easter bunnies in the supermarket. This year, we had to stay at home and everyone was very sad, but we still managed to eat our body weight in cheap chocolate, so not a total loss. The Easter bilby. That's
Easter bilby. I need to look up pictures of this
immediately. That
sounds real adorable. Sabine wrote, I am a huge fan of Savor since, well, ever, but I was truly shocked, yes, shocked, that you never had white asparagus. As you mentioned, we Germans eat mostly the white, thick one, although the green is getting kind of known in the last years, but never really made it in the kitchens of the Germans. Of course, we know a lot of ways to prepare the white gold, as it is sometimes called. Most of the time, a true German will eat it with fresh potatoes, thin slices of cooked and or air-dried ham, and sauce hollandaise, or even more traditional, melted butter. The peel is used to make a soup out of it. Most of the times you don't buy asparagus in a grocery store, but either in one of the stalls in the streets, which appear out of nowhere in April to sell local grown asparagus and later strawberries, or you buy it directly at the producer's farm, who mostly will also have said ham and potatoes. To buy asparagus from another part of Germany, let alone other parts of the world, is frowned upon. Yes, we Germans love our asparagus. How much? Well, in times of corona, when the borders are closed, the asparagus farmers were alarmed. If the borders are remaining closed, the workers who help harvesting, who are from Eastern Europe, are not allowed to come in. The vegetable will rot on the fields, and Germans will not have their traditional spring vegetable. To avert this crisis, the German government not only allowed the harvest workers to come by a special permit, but flew them in, I kid you not, instead of let them travel by road and train. One would hope that the workers will be paid better this year, but I wouldn't count on it. And another personal story about asparagus. One of the first dates I had with a former boyfriend who was American was an asparagus dinner I wanted to cook. Since he lived next to a farm, I told him to bring a bundle of asparagus. He came late because he had to run around to find proper green asparagus, which he proudly presented to me, saying it was the only bundle he could find in the whole city. He was so proud of it, and I looked at him asking, what the hell should I do with these green, thin excuses of Spears? Well, that was over 20 years ago. The former boyfriend is my husband now, and we live happily ever after eating white asparagus since.
That's so great. That's a great first date story.
Oh, that is very, very sweet. Oh my gosh, that's wonderful.
I'm determined we'll try this one day, Lauren. One day.
I think we will. I think we're going to get to do it. I'm psyched.
All right.
I want this experience. I want to go to Germany, and I want this experience of getting it from a fresh farm stand and not being sure how to cook it.
I am very excited for that experience as well. So thanks to both of them for writing in. If you would like to write to us, if you have banana bread or muffin projects in the works and want to share with us, you can email us. Our email address is hello@savorpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SavorPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Savor is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.